This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last time, we left Ruby tossing and turning over Douglas following their evening at the pictures, and she's had some startling insights about herself.
Edie's hearty breakfast of tinned spaghetti on toast and fried egg did not look good splattered on the shingle at the side of the dirt road. A few minutes before, as the Morris had jutted its way over the corrugated track that wound toward the forested foothills, Ruby had turned to Edie, about to comment about the corridor of fern trees brushing the side of the car, and seen Edie green about the gills.
"Stop the car! Quick!"
A volley of stones rattled when Douglas swung to the side of the road, and Edie had opened the door and leaned out, just in time. They did not get to the lookout point he wanted to show them, where he'd said the plains of the Manawatu lay like a quilt with ribbons of rivers twisting across it.
"Feeling better?" said Ruby.
"She did well to hold on until she opened the door," said Douglas encouragingly.
"Blah!" Edie groaned. "Do we have to keep going in the car? When are we getting there?"
If he was disappointed, he didn't show it. Instead, he produced a glass flagon of water from behind his seat.
"I keep it for the engine," he said. "Just in case. It should be all right to drink."
A fantail swooped and flitted around Edie's head, piping cheekily. A tui chortled and chimed a counterpoint. Ruby spat on her hanky and wiped Edie's face.
"I'm sorry," said Edie.
"It's all right, chicken," she said, stroking Edie's hair. In the background, behind the wall of dense scrub beyond the stony lay-by, came a cacophonic chorus of birdsong.
"Listen to that," Douglas said. "Isn't it glorious?"
The thwump-winged flight of a heavy wood pigeon crossing overhead made them look up.
"I think the birds are wondering who we are," said Douglas.
"When I was a little girl," said Ruby, "my mum used to pack sandwiches and a thermos of tea, and we'd go for a Sunday drive to a place called Tui Glen, just to hear the birds. We'd have an ice cream on the way."
"Ice cream," said Edie.
Ruby rolled her eyes.
"Don't be silly. We'd need to make sure your collywobbles have settled down first," chuckled Douglas.
"Can we at least go back to town now?" said Edie.
"I think we ought to go back slowly, Douglas," said Ruby. "Edie can sit on my knee in the front, if that's all right with you."
"Why not?" he said cheerily.
"It might be best if we have the windows open. Do you mind not smoking on the way?" He gave a mock salute. "She'll be all right as long as she has air."
"I think we'll stop at the park for a bit before we go to Frank's."
The passenger door was hardly open when Edie leapt out, bolting for the grassy playground like a young animal released from a cage.
"I'm going to the swings," she sang out.
"Careful, I don't want you getting sick again," Ruby called back. If any words came out of Edie's mouth, they were lost. Douglas lit a cigarette. His hair was the colour of light sand,
without the Brill Cream plastering it down.
"So, you've made up your mind?" he said. "This might be your last week at Arcadia."
"I've got to. For Edie."
He drew deeply on his cigarette.
"Other than a few nights with your friend, you haven't found anywhere more permanent to stay."
"There hasn't really been time. I might find a flat with Janice. I know she'd like it."
That was mean-spirited of her. She had no intention of living with Janice, even though it was tempting.
"And will you?" he asked.
"I'm not sure. I don't know that I want us to live with anyone."
"Oh."
He looked downcast.
"I'd hoped you'd consider my suggestion."
Edie's voice registered above the noise of other children and the birds in the big aviary.
"Mum, give me a push."
"No, I won't," Ruby called back. "You're too old for that sort of thing. Douglas and I are talking." He returned Edie's wave.
"Your idea about Edie and me moving in with this friend of yours who needs a housekeeper?"
"Frank." "Yes."
Ruby ran her fingers through her hair.
"How serious are you?"
"Oh," he said. "I don't suppose I pressed the point, did I?"
"How bad is he? I'm not a nurse or anything like that."
"No, no, he doesn't want nursing. Perish the thought."
"What then?"
The swing was empty. Edie was running off with a pack of shrieking youngsters. A ball landed and rolled on the ground near Ruby's feet. Douglas threw it back.
"Edie, don't go too far," Ruby called.
"We're gonna play rounders," Edie yelled.
"All right, but stay where I can see you."
"You're a good mother, aren't you?" said Douglas.
"Don't go buttering me up. You'll have me feeling that you want me to consider doing something I might not want to do."
"Will you please just agree to meeting him? He's expecting us."
"You gave me the impression he's practically a cripple and in need of looking after."
"No, I haven't made myself clear."
"Perhaps you haven't." His face shadowed. He seemed to struggle for words. "You did say that you and Frank used to be on the stage," she said, by way of a prompt.
"Yes, before the war."
She glanced at Edie, scooping at the ball, waiting for him to say more. A vein pulsed in his neck, and he bit his knuckle.
"We were so young. It all looked so..."
He drew deeply on his cigarette and blew a slow stream of smoke. Then he threw the last of his cigarette on the path and ground the stub out under his shoe. He turned his back to her, looking over the grassy playground.
"The whole world seemed so full of possibility. We were so full of verve, and more than a little talent between us. We imagined we'd get back and pick up where we left off. Even in Italy, when we were in the thick of things, while the Germans were biffing things at us, Frank was writing notes for a new routine. He was a real card. After it was all over, when Frank finally got out of hospital, it turned out he still had a couple of Jerry souvenirs lodged inside him."
There was a catch in his voice. He turned away from her. He didn't have to tell her. Frank was more than his friend. What could be said? She wanted to put her arms around him. It didn't seem right to try to comfort him. When Douglas finally faced her, his eyes were rimmed with red. The deep blue irises had greyed. The children's game had changed to a noisy rumpus. Ruby and Douglas stood side by side, watching the children stampeding after one another. The ball had become a missile.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I don't like to talk about it."
"It's all right."
Frank tries telling me the doctor says he'll come right. I don't believe him. The truth is, he's not doing well at all. He had his mother. She passed away not long ago.
He caught his breath.
I'd like him to have someone there.
Why aren't you there with him?
Douglas shook his head slowly and sighed, as though she'd shown herself to be stupid.
He's more or less independent, he says, but now and then he has.
Douglas floundered for a word.
Episodes. Times when.
She'd heard about the episodes that some war veterans were prone to. Shell shock and worse.
It's an idea at this stage, Douglas said. Seemed best to speak to you first. There's every chance he won't like it at all.
Edie threw the ball at a running boy, hitting him squarely between the shoulders. It must have hurt, but the boy fell laughing with bravado. Then he picked up the ball and gave chase. The group scattered.
Look, Douglas said. As I said, I'm talking about you and Edie having a place to live in exchange for some housekeeping. Preparing proper meals, giving the place a tidy up, that sort of thing.
Like a common law wife, you mean?
What an extraordinary thing to say.
He was irritated now.
What would make you say that? And it's hardly fair. It'd be nothing more than you'd be doing if you and Edie had your own place.
Have you considered what Frank's neighbours might have to say about it?
About the two of you moving in with Frank?
He scratched the side of his head.
I confess I hadn't given that any thought. Do you care terribly?
No, but people will think I'm his fancy woman.
Douglas rubbed his hand over his mouth.
Oh.
You didn't really go over what the terms are going to be, Ruby said. I've got a job now. I don't want to quit.
No one's suggesting you do.
The ball was lying on the grass. There was no sign of Edie or the others.
Ruby shot onto the grass where the children had been playing. She's gone. Where is she? Edie?
What's happened?
Douglas ran after her.
Edie!
Ruby screamed, panic thumping through her.
Edie!
The aviary birds screeched. People walking their dogs turned to stare. Douglas pulled her to a halt, pointing at figures sitting under a clump of trees.
See, he said. Nothing to worry about. It looks like she's storytelling.
Half a dozen children sat around Edie, who was gesturing extravagantly.
Ruby gulped her breath. Yes, a Pied Piper she is.
Edie, immersed in her performance, hadn't noticed them. The weather had changed and the clouds had drawn in.
What brought that on?
Douglas put his hand on her shoulder. Ruby shrugged his hand away, cursing herself and blaming him for distracting her from keeping her eyes on Edie. She'd never forgive herself if...
May I have a cigarette? She said.
Of course.
He lit one for her.
Thanks.
The residue of her panic hummed through her veins. At last, she said, hadn't we better get going? Didn't you say Frank was expecting us for lunch?
Douglas looked at his watch.
Oh, crumbs.
I'd better go and wind Edie's story up, said Ruby. Don't forget, Douglas, it's not just me, is it? There's her to consider.
The three of them were silent for a while after leaving the park. The indigo hills trimmed the horizon as they drove through the flat streets. Edie had insisted on being in the front bucket seat, with the excuse that she might be sick again. Ruby saw Douglas glance at her in the rear vision mirror, and she turned to the side window, sifting through her tumbling thoughts. Douglas's love for Frank made her aware of the degree of desolation of her own life. Had she and Angel loved one another? Or had they simply comforted each other, so they stopped noticing how wretched they were? Not that anyone ever noticed whether Angel was wretched, with her easy laughter and her snippets of song. Other than Edie, Ruby had no one to love, and no one else loved her. Now, it seemed the only male friend she had loved another man. Her situation was so absurd she felt giddy.
"Aren't we going to stop for an ice cream?"
Edie popped her head up as they passed a corner dairy. "Not this time," Ruby and Douglas said in unison. For a split second he'd touched her heart. She bit her lip and looked out the window again. Edie launched into another song from Calamity Jane, and Douglas egged her on by joining in. This time, Ruby couldn't hold back. A giggle exploded out of her like a sneeze, and her laughter went on while they sang, until her ribs ached. The streets they were driving through had young trees planted on the berms, and leaves were already drifting into the gutter. Here and there, pink camellias were coming into early bloom. There were some fine houses, nothing like the pokey little houses crammed together in the street where Janice lived. In this part of town, showy gardens decorated the front of attractive, well-built bungalows. Large, older villas featured tennis courts. There were several more modern, Spanish-style stucco houses, some of them two-storied, showing the changes in the town's fortunes and architectural fashions. "Well-appointed," Hilda would have said. "A suburban idyll. A place where people didn't know how safe they were." Frank's house had a low fence in the front, made of concrete, formed to resemble roughly hewn branches. The last of the summer roses still made a display. It was a wide, weatherboard bungalow, with brick pillars on each side of a broad porch and symmetrically placed broad bay windows. A handsome place. At the window of the house next door, a curtain was drawn aside.
"That lady's looking at us," said Edie.
"That's an old friend of Frank's mother," said Douglas. "She's taken to looking in on Frank almost daily since his mother passed away."
"Oh," said Ruby. "Will he really need anyone living in then?"
"I'm sure Vi means well." Douglas leaned to her ear and lowered his voice unnecessarily. "Let's just say you don't seem the sort who's going to go bustling and nosying about where she isn't wanted."
Frank was sitting in a wicker chair, taking in what sun there was, his braces dangling over his rolled-up shirt sleeves. When he saw them, he lifted a hand to shade his eyes.
"There you are," he said,
clapping shut the book he'd been reading.
"Steinbeck, some stories never get old, unlike the rest of us, eh?"
Ruby wasn't sure what she'd expected. A pale, shrunken cripple? One or more of his limbs withered and useless? A man horribly scarred? She couldn't say why she'd pictured him as old. He seemed not much older than Douglas. Better looking, with olive skin and finer, sharper features. Black hair fell over one eyebrow, and he flicked it back with the back of his hand. Ruby wondered whether the hair sprouting on his chin and jawline was a lack of interest in his appearance or an intention to cultivate a beard. It didn't suit him. Douglas shuffled about awkwardly, not greeting Frank as warmly as she'd expected.
"Well, well, well," Frank said without getting out of his chair. "Douglas, when you said you were bringing a couple of friends, I had no idea you meant a beautiful young lady, and so modern."
He waved a hand in the direction of her cropped hair, which she'd forgotten about, and she patted it lightly. Then he turned his attention to Edie.
And what's this? How do you do, Tinkerbell?"
"This is Edie," said Douglas.
"How do you do, Mr.?" Edie stammered.
"Oh, none of that Mr. business," said Frank.
You can call me Frank, and I'll call you Tinkerbell. How's that, eh?
Edie squirmed with delight, grinning. From his chair, he extended his hand to Ruby with affected deliberation, as though he were playing the part of a pope, his eyes laughing.
How nice of you to pay me a visit. You have the advantage. You know my name.
Frank, yes, pleased to meet you. I'm Ruby, she said.
Ruby, of course, he said,
lifting her hand to his lips with cold fingers.
What a delectable creature you are. Let's go in. Put the kettle on, Dougie.
The wicker creaked as he used the arms of the chair to heave himself upright. He seemed to unfold himself, and she saw how tall and broad-shouldered he was. His hand quivered as he reached for the horn and silver handle of the walking stick that was hooked over the back of the chair. Douglas hovered, watching as Frank turned his foot.
The kettle man, Frank said between gritted teeth.
Edie held Ruby's hand, standing back.
No, no.
Frank waved the walking stick at the door.
Ladies first. Go on.
The kitchen door opened against the bulk of a large green refrigerator. Someone had cheered the room up with coloured shapes of lemons and oranges with green leaves stenciled randomly on the cream wall. The frame of the clock in the centre of the wall had been painted to match the refrigerator. The effect was both artistic and oddly sad.
Have a seat, do, said Frank. We won't bother going into the parlour.
Douglas stood by the kitchen bench, spooning tea into a yellow teapot. The clock ticked loudly towards 1 o'clock, each tick as awkward as the next. Ruby was trying to think of something to say when Frank rapped his fingernails on the table.
Douglas, be a dear and get the good cups from the china cabinet.
Can I do anything? Offered Ruby as Douglas left the room.
There's a pot of soup on the stove. It's only Watties, but it's all right. Mother wouldn't have the tinned stuff in the place. Gone cold now, I expect.
Was that a veiled admonishment for their being late?
You might turn the hob on. I've already cut some bread for toast, but we'll have a cup of tea first. Those old hobs take a while to heat up.
Edie sat with her heels on the rail of the chair, her hands around her knees. With no apparent self-consciousness, her eyes were fixed on Frank.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.